Hello, and welcome to Read It With Whiskey, the place to be if you are a sci-fi or fantasy reader. My name is Laura, and I am your host. I am a reader, writer, and whiskey drinker, and I'm here to share with you the person behind the page, the author. And today we have Laura Dietering. She is the author of The Witch in the Envelope. Let me tell you a little bit about this Laura. Laura grew up in the Midwest and now resides in sunny Florida. The change in weather took some getting used to, but her little town has become a little paradise. Laura graduated from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign with degrees in history and secondary education. She's always loved learning about people and the processes around the choices they make. In 2017, Laura was struck with an invisible illness, MDDS, and chronic migraines. At times she wanted to give up, but her faith, coupled with the extraordinary people God put into her life, gave her the strength to keep going. Laura is happily married and enjoys staying at home with her two daughters while pursuing her passions and investing quality time with family and friends. Now let me tell you about The Witch in the Envelope. As a child, nightmares of a hauntingly beautiful yet vicious witch plagued Liddy Erickson. But when she wakes one morning with a deep gash on her chest in the same place the witch attacked her, she realizes these were no ordinary dreams. Shortly after she confides in her best friend, Will, his entire family disappears along with their memories of them. It's now 1998 and 17-year-old Liddy has one goal, to move out of the cold Chicago suburbs after graduation. Two things that are not in her perfectly planned life, fun and dating. That is, until the new transfer student catches the eye of every girl at Wheeling High School. With intriguing scars and eyes that seem to glow, he awakens something inexplicable in Liddy and proves to know her even better than her closest friends. This forbidden attraction could be her greatest downfall or her saving grace. Laura and I had so much fun talking all about her book and all about her life story. I'm so excited for you guys to dive right in. So without further ado, let's do it. Hello, Laura. I love your name. And welcome to Read It With Whiskey. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great. And I'm so excited to talk to you. We were just talking before hitting record. For those listening, that we love talking to people who have the same name as us.
And it's going to be fun.
Yeah, so much fun. I remember when I was young, something I would do was go to the library and I would specifically look for people who had the same name as me as authors. And it was kind of like putting it into the ether that my name's going to be on a book one day. So I don't know if you've ever done that.
I actually felt kinship with Laura Ingalls Wilder in Little House on the Prairie. So that was like, you know, and then they had the show and I was just okay. I don't know. You know how there's always that name in school? Like my name wasn't really common in school. I think there was maybe like one other Laura that I came across. I wasn't, you know, Jessica or Jennifer, that
or Amber.
There's nothing wrong with those names. I'm just saying I was a high school teacher. So there are names that like you'll see a lot of over so many years. So I felt the same way with books. I was like, oh my gosh, she has my name. So it was
fun. Love it. Oh, well, yeah. And I'm so excited to talk to you about your book, The Witch in the Envelope. And oh, it's just so beautiful. I love the cover and the design. And book two also. I just saw the book cover for book two over on Amazon. So we're going to dive into that in just a few minutes. But first, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you began your writing career.
So I just turned 40 in October. So yay. That's been you know, fun. But I'm a mom. I have held many different jobs. I was a high school teacher for a while. I taught half the day I taught history and economics, and the other half of the day I taught dance. And so it was a cool dynamic because I never got bored. I was two different people essentially throughout the day. and then I had my first daughter and I went back to school because I had actually started college pre-med. And so I went back to school and became a cardiac sonographer. And then I had my second daughter and we moved back to Florida. And childcare was so expensive. We decided as a family that I would stay home with our girls until they were both old enough to be in school. And I've always had a bucket list item to just, I wanted to write a children's book, like a hard hardcover children's book. That was like my bucket list item. And I had 1 year left before my youngest Zoe was going into school. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, now is the time. Because I know myself and like my mental capacity, what I have to offer. And I'm really kind of hard on myself. Like I want to feel like I'm putting in a full effort and doing a good job. And I just knew I couldn't for me. And I just plenty of people who are capable and bless you because you're a rock star. I just knew my limitations. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm doing it now because when she's in school, I'm going to be working, mommying, wife, friend, you know, all the things. And so, yeah, so I started writing what then quickly became like middle grade when I started outlining my story. And then when I started writing it, definitely turned high school. I think it's because it was where I'm comfortable at. You know, we're in school for so many years of our lives, and then I taught in the high school setting, so I was just more comfortable with it. So yeah, that's kind of how it came about. But then publishing, so I actually finished writing The Witch in the Envelope, the first draft, in like 2.5 months. Had no idea. I was very like naive to the whole writing world. I just knew I had a story I wanted to write. I hadn't done like a ton of research or been on social, and I had no idea what Wattpad was. Like it was like such an eye-opener. But I think it was good for me because I also didn't have anything like negative or scary in the back of my head, being like, oh, this is such a competitive, hard feel. Nobody's going to read your book. Nobody's going to see it. It was just like, I have a story and I want to tell it. I'm so excited. So yeah, so I actually wrote that the book. It took me like 2.5 months after the first draft. And then I was like, I'm going to put it away for a little bit and be present now. And then it took me 4 years to publish due to health stuff. So that was that was fun.
Yeah, oh, there's so much to unpack there.
Yeah.
I know, what a fun story though. And yeah, that's a fast timeline to write because this is not a short book. This is a meaty
No.
book.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, 2.5 months to write all this, that's insane. I mean, insane, awesome. Like, props to
Yeah.
you.
Let's not discuss the timeline for book two or
Oh. No, but I think that's fair because book two and book three and book four and five, six, seven, however many books you have in the series, I feel like, especially as new authors, it's really hard because that first book is your baby and it's kind of like all of the ideas are coming and it's easy to just throw them out. And then you're like,
Yeah.
oh, a series. Like you have to tie everything together. You can't
Yes.
leave the loose ends. And so, especially for the newer authors, it's hard. I know it was for me to be able to wrap things up and make sure all the loose ends were completed. So
Agreed.
we have, yeah, exactly. So we have this first book out, and your second book is released as well. And now we have the third book coming out soon. Do you have a release date for the third book in the
I
series?
don't have a release date. I know the month, which will be April. The reason for that is I have I'm technically disabled, neurologically disabled, and so my editor also is somebody from the chronic illness community that I have built rapport with, and so we just kind of try to be as flexible as we can with each other. So it takes us a little bit, but we get there.
Yeah, definitely. And as this episode comes out, it is now April. So in the description of this episode, you will find the direct link to book three for the listeners here. So yeah, let's dive into this book. So The
Okay.
Witch in the Envelope, book one of the series. Can you tell us what this book is all about?
Okay, so where my motivations came from is I love YA fantasy. I love to read. It doesn't have to be fantasy. It could be dystopian. It could be romance. I love YA for a lot of different reasons. But for one, it's like a lot of coming of age stories. It's usually very character driven. And so I read a lot of YA, and I just kind of started seeing this trend that it was very like upper YA.
For those of you who are listening, she just winked at me. That's what that pause was. Okay, keep going.
I just felt like a lot of the content was becoming very adult and the characters were sounding super adult. And the things they were doing were very adult. And so I was very motivated to write something that more resembled, I consider it more like classic YA. We have like, you know, they sound more like they're in high school. They sound more their age. And then of course they'll grow up and have some, you know, character development. But I kind of wanted to write something that was like nostalgic in the sense to like remind readers like what we loved about YA in the first place. And I know it's not for everybody because there is, you know, like a lot of like the 90s cringe and like, you know, high school stuff. But that was really my motivation, was to write something that, you know, hopefully you can fall in love with YA again or remind yourself of the reasons why you fell in love with it. Some of the themes or vibes that you'll have in it, there's like a lot of 90s nostalgia, loyal friendships between girls. I feel like that was something, like even though I wanted it to be classic at the time, I feel like a lot of the older YA books, there was like not as quite as good of a representation of female friendships or relationships. Of course, there's like the mean girl like throwback I kind of have in there, but you also see solid female friendships. Mm-hmm. There's lost heritage. There's the chosen one trope, friends to lovers. It's a loose retelling of Sleeping Beauty. You got the Snow Queen vibes. There's winter folklore in there with Saint Nick, if you caught that. A unique magic system. I think it is anyways, where the abilities come are from your eye color, and you could tell what their giftings are based on eye color. Mystery, the notion of true love. So I kind of threw in some princess vibes over there. You know, it's paranormal, urban fantasy. You'll see more portal fantasy as it goes on. And then like the themes of like forgiveness and grace and yeah.
Yeah. So. Oh. So, and to start with, we are going to talk about the 90s references, because yeah, this book has a slew of 90s references, and a majority of the book does take place right around the mid-90s. And as a millennial who grew up in the 90s, I had a blast reading this book. So you said some people might not like it, but I loved it. I loved reading all of the 90s cringe, like you said.
Yeah.
You kind of mentioned why you wanted to have that nostalgia. So I think instead of asking you the why question, mm-hmm, kind of more so talk about what it was like to actually put those things into the book. So did you take things specifically from your own time in the 90s and put them into the book, or kind of how did that whole process go?
I had a lot of fun memories to draw on. And then of course, just 90s culture in general, like a lot of, you know, my favorite movies are from that time. And you just kind of remind yourself what the language was, what they were wearing. And, you know, my daughter is now 13. So just seeing the style, like over the past couple years, just like shopping with her and like just seeing it come back. And it was also because YA is so heavily read by, you know, women, you know, I think 25 or a little bit older. And then mm-hmm, of course I wanted it to be something that could be fun for both. Like they'll be seeing it, younger readers will be seeing these things in the store right now and references. And they're seeing a lot of like, do you know that 70s show? Now mm-hmm, they came with like that 90s show, like yes, it's coming back. Right. And I just kind of felt like it was, and I was like, how fun. So for example, like my daughter, like I finally let her read Twilight, and I just felt like she was at an age where, you know, we could talk about it. And it's still, for me, it's really clean. The language is clean. You don't see anything. And just kind of talk about it. She fell in love with Twilight, and it was so fun for me to be able to connect with mm-hmm, her in that way. I was hoping that with this story, moms would be able to have fun reading it and reminiscing, and then reading it alongside their daughters, and then being able to like swap stories. So, but you said my personal experiences. So the high school in there you see is the high school I went to, not the high schools I worked at. So you'll see that. And then the characters themselves are like mashups of just different people that I experienced. So yeah, so like the homecoming or the winter formal dress that Danny wears is what I wore to my homecoming dance. I think it was my sophomore or junior year. So I just kind of took inspiration in those ways from that. Mm-hmm. So, and then like the crystal tattoos was something we all definitely wore. The mall is something we all went to. That mall, Woodfield Mall in Chicago area, was like huge and was the it spot. So,
Wow. Oh, I love it. That just, it's bringing back memories for me. Because as you're talking, I'm like thinking about like the equivalence of my own high school experience. I'm like, oh, so much fun to read. And I really love that idea of having this book series be for like a mom and daughter to have a little mini book club together, because yeah, the mom would love the nostalgia and then the daughter would love the story because she's living in that time yeah frame of high school. So I think that's so cool. Oh, how much fun is that? Okay. So something I just heard recently, and I had to bring it up because I thought of you right away when I saw this reference. I don't remember who put it on social media. I think it was on Instagram. Usually I'm only on Instagram. Right. But they said that now any book that takes place prior to 2000 is considered a historical novel. Have okay you heard this?
Yes. Okay. So I don't know if you are familiar with author Kim Chance. She's wonderful. She is traditionally published. She wrote A Duology, Keeper, Seeker. She is all over. She's like a huge cheerleader for authors, and she's a wonderful person. And when, again, I was a newbie, I was like, what genres would I like market this as or whatever? She's like, well, you could write it as historical fantasy. I was like, what? How dare you? Like, I couldn't. At that point, it was such a shock. And I was like, Laura, be real. It's been like 25 years almost. I was like, mm-hmm, okay, this is so true, but okay. So yeah, she's the one who put that on my radar. I haven't marketed it as historical fantasy. It could be. You're absolutely right.
And I mean, I don't think you would need to market it as a historical fantasy, because I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. I saw that and I was appalled, and I was like, that means that I'm a part of history. Like, yeah, no, I'm not. You can't label me as that. That's when I grew up. And so when I think history, I'm thinking like early 1900s. So like, you know, anyway, yeah, I wanted to get your input on that because I was just appalled as well. So I think it definitely doesn't need to be marketed as historical, but
okay.
great little nugget of interesting on social media right now.
Yes, right.
All right. Okay, so let's dive a little bit into the magic system of the book. You already kind of mentioned a little bit,
yeah,
but there are powers in this world, and at the start, our characters really don't know or understand them. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the title has witch in it, so we know that there's going to be magic. But as you mentioned in the intro there, it's a little bit more paranormal at times as well. So can you yeah give our listeners kind of some insight into what the magic system looks like in this world?
Okay, so the magic system, and as characters get introduced, especially in book two, because we'll be taken to Christus in book two. So you'll see more of the magic system. So watchers, they're called, are born with, they're born with giftings, just innate giftings. And most watchers will have one primary gifting and that's all they have. But if you are considered a royal, you will have what's called, like, you can have two giftings that are pretty strong that appear. And then every, you know, I didn't really put a time frame on it, but it's not, it's special when it happens, but there will be watchers who are born with white lighter capability, which is just like devoid of color because they could do it all. And so white lighter, and then if you find your match or your mate, I don't like to use the word mate, but like you find your perfect match, let's say, when you combine those giftings, you are revered in Christus because you are a protector. So that's why I came up with the name Watcher, because they really are, you know, just kind of protectors of the realm, peacemakers. So kind of to go through the colors, I guess. So Liddy, our main female character, she is a purple. And so her giftings are more within the fine arts realm. So through like dance and song, she's able to have powers in that regard, although we don't necessarily see much of her gifting in book one. It gives her strength and the ability. She's very empathetic and really, you can see her like a caring sense from her. And now the male main character, Will, he is primarily a green, which is a warrior, but he is a royal. So don't want to give away too much, but he has a second gifting that you'll learn in the future books. Mm-hmm. And then you have Nick. Nick is like this mysterious man who comes in and out, and we find out more about him. Liddy says throughout, like blue eyes, bright blue eyes. So he's a blue, and that is a royal. So you'll learn more about those later, what his giftings are. Mm-hmm. But and then you have Mara, who is a witch, and she has a color that no one has ever seen before of orange. So that's why you see the orange on the front cover. And we'll find out why and what makes her special in book two. So book two, I love so much because you will get to see basically the origin story of how the witch becomes the villain.
Oh, I love it. Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, the magic system is definitely fun, and it's something that they're learning throughout the story, which I really like. And then obviously, as you said, in book two, you're going to learn a lot more about it.
Yeah, there's just to give an idea, there's like healers, there's people who are good with like the soil ground. So think like it takes a village mentality, like a community to survive. You have people who are, you know, farmers, good at land, people who are healers, people who are part of education, people who are a part of entertainment, so we all don't lose our mind. So we have all these factions of giftings.
Oh, that's so cool. And I like that the dance kind of comes into play. Because, I mean, you just said earlier that you actually were teaching dance. And so is that why you brought dance into the book, is because it was such a big part of your history?
Yeah, but I also don't see it. Like, I'll see it mm-hmm. mentioned in books, but I don't, like, I mean, gosh, if we go back to like 90s movies, like the dance was such a pivotal moment. And so I kind of wanted to try to capture like that and capture, I mean, I tried again, this was my first book, but just capturing like movement in general and mm-hmm. that connection with like your partner and how intimate something so simple could be. Liddy is very self-conscious. So I think that definitely came from me a little bit, where it's like, and as a mom, you know, I'm trying to hopefully send that message to young girls, like, You have a gift, or you have like, you're good at this. You have a talent, you have a gifting, share it, you know, mm-hmm. like, instead we're so focused on like, oh, I'm going to look a certain way, or I'm not good enough at this, and I'm not perfect at this. And it's just like, nope, you're given these gifts, use them because other people enjoy them. And then, you know, it's another conversation when you're so worried about, you know, like the mean person aspect or jealous reactions mm-hmm. that people get. But those are all learning experiences. But yeah, so that whole idea of like performance and just having to show yourself and be yourself in front of other people was definitely there.
Yeah. Okay. So you did mention some of the characters and a little bit about their powers, but I would like to know, who was your favorite character to write within the series?
Oh, how you do this to me. Cause it's so hard, cause they're all your babies. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I will say my favorite character to write was Pri, for sure.
Oh yeah.
She is so full of life, super smart, but doesn't let people really know that because she's trying to fit in. So if you guys don't know, Pri is Indian, and this was, again, modeled after one of my good friends. Like, it's not her, but it's kind of modeled after some of the struggles that I saw her with Indian parents and like the dynamics in their family, and mm-hmm. she had an older brother and how she was treated versus the brother. And then the whole idea of arranged marriage. And so my friend really did run away to my house, like a lot of times. but she's blunt. She's a little boy crazy because she's not allowed to, like, if a boy looks at her, she's grounded, you know, like, but she's loyal as heck, and she's so fun, and she's super smart. So it was fun watching her, you know, try to be, I'm doing air quotes, a normal teenager, trying to just find who she is. Mm-hmm. And, she just offered comedy to me, and I just loved how lovingly blunt she was. And so she was fun. But my favorite scenes to write with characters would definitely be Will and Liddy, as we talked about, like the dancing, like their friendships, like their missing memories. There's like, they kind of embodied so many of the tropes I adored and kind of helped me bring the story, like, again, like bringing it back to classic YA, all those tropes and cheesy moments of why we fell in love with YA in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And those scenes were really fun to read as well. So you did well. It was your favorite scene to write, and you could tell in the book as I was reading.
Oh,
so.
Yay.
And Pri was one of my favorites too. She was who I put down as my favorite character because, like you said, she's blunt. She's a little bit of that comic relief, and
yes.
Just the scenes with the women. And like you mentioned, it's their camaraderie and how they really stand up for each other is, I just really loved that throughout the book. And I love those scenes when they were all together. It was always fun.
Yeah.
Like shopping for dresses. I loved all that.
Thanks. Yes. That was, I mean, that's what we did. Then you had to go to mm-hmm. the food court because one person's starving. It's like, oh, but I got to find. No, yes.
Exactly.
I'll get a whole group of girls together. It's never a dull moment.
Okay. So we kind of already talked about who should read this book. So instead of talking about who should read the book, how about we talk about what emotions should the reader kind of expect when they read it? Should they laugh? Should they cry, smile, get uncomfortable, be challenged, anything like that? What should they expect?
Okay. Well, I think based on like reviews that I've seen, so I think you can expect to laugh with Pri. You can expect to swoon. I like was mm-hmm. really, and I mean, I wanted to throw the book at some point. Like I was like, get together already. No.
Right.
So hopefully you'll swoon. Like I really loved, again, that's what I really loved about YA was all the angst and like the hand touch and like, oh my gosh, he looked at me, you know, like all the innocent stuff mm-hmm. that I feel like a lot of YA is moving away from today and just focusing on taking it very far. Mm-hmm. So you might get a little uncomfortable. There's a couple scenes with the witch. There is a scene at the end with another friend, towards it, you know, what I'm talking about, after the dance, that might get mm-hmm. a little uncomfortable. But I feel like hopefully like in a good way, like you don't feel uncomfortable, like, oh, this is like an ick for me, but more mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Are they okay?
Yeah.
Like this is either horrible or, oh my gosh, are they going to kiss? You know, things like that. And then the whole point of Justin's arc that you'll see in Liddy, actually. So part of her character arc is you will see the whole idea of forgiveness mm-hmm. and grace. And, you know, because that is something so important because so many people will hold on to things and it's really detrimental to yourself. And forgiveness is for yourself. I know it seems like, oh, well, I'm letting this person off the hook or whatever, but it's really for yourself. So that was really important for me with Justin's character, that theme come out.
I think I had a little bit of every emotion in there. And yeah, that angst was really getting to me. I was like, okay, let's move on to book two then. Let's keep on going.
Oh,
no,
yes.
I love it.
Oh, yes. I will say with the angst, just so readers are aware, like in book two, I push the boundaries of what I call steam. So like, mm-hmm. is this going to go where I think it's going? Nope. So in my books, it will stay like clean, fade to black, closed door. I think mm-hmm. that's what YA should be. And, but it will like push you a little bit like, oh my gosh, we're good.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, okay, we didn't go there. So I like to push those feelings and those emotions. Like, and it's fun because I have my daughter's friends are all the same age and like, I'll have them read a part and they're like, you know, Miss D, I was really nervous, you know, like I didn't know how far. I was like, no, we said I wouldn't have given it to you if I, you know, made it adult content.
Right, exactly.
I said, but you should be squealing a little bit, like, oh my gosh, I think I'm not getting excited, you know.
Oh, I can't imagine reading this book as a teenager. I mean, now, obviously, it's completely different as an adult. So, oh, I can't imagine. I bet they just love it. Oh, so fun.
I don't want to toot my own horn because that's not what this is. But so I was having a really hard time with my daughter in school because her self-esteem really plummeted in third grade when they were preparing for state exams. And my gosh, they would have to do like a reading, very dry and whatever, and then answer the questions. And like, mm-hmm. I was even having a hard time answering the questions. I was like, well, I could make arguments for B and D options, like, you know, because it's to me.
Yeah.
And so she was just really struggling with like reading comprehension, or she felt like she was. And so her self-esteem was really plummeting. And so she begged me to read my first book. And this is before it was published, so I still had some editing to do, but she begged me to read it. She finished. I mean, like you said, it's a lengthy book. So this was fourth grade, by the way, because I was end of fourth grade. So she was kind of, we were still struggling with the reading, and she would cry every time she just had to do work, and she just felt dumb. And I'm like, you're not dumb. It's just you're reading things that you're not connecting with. So I let her read my book, and I tell you this, it totally changed her idea of what reading was. And so I just discovered she's like me. She likes to have stories that are very character focused and relationship focused. And I mean, I couldn't get her. I mean, she went and read the Lunar Chronicles, which are pretty hefty, thick books. You know, like I said, I allowed her eventually to read Twilight. And I mean, she just loves reading now. So I just, again, it makes me a little bit sad, like the disservice we kind of do our children sometimes in the school setting, because I don't, you know, it was a really hard couple years as a mom to watch your kid be like, I suck at reading. I hate reading it. And it was like, no, you know, and I'm sitting here like love reading and writing books and stuff. And I'm like, no.
I mean, that's so true though. Cause going through school, I remember reading books for school, and I was just like, this is so boring. I'm not interested in this. So I wouldn't want to read. But if you give them something that is actually going to be entertaining, they're going to improve exponentially more because they're going to want to keep going.
Now, if you ask my daughter, she's like, I never had a problem with reading. I never like cry. I'm like, I beg to differ.
Oh, I love it. Well, speaking of reading, as writers, we all start out as readers. So what is your favorite genre to read?
So I love YA. I actually like anything that has romance in it besides super like dark themes where it's like just really focused on just morbid and death and killing and or very graphic in those types of themes. So I love, if I had my way, everything would be fluff and happy endings and all that, which which is not realistic, but I just, I have a hard time, not hard time. I can't read. So, I didn't really get into, but, being, disabled. So having, something called chronic vestibular migraine. And then on top of that, I have something called Mal de Debussy syndrome, or MDDS for short. And those two conditions play on each other and make each other worse. So what's actually funny is if I get too over emotional in a story, which it's fine. Like there's lots of great books. I just can't read them often because if I start crying in a book or whatnot, I will trigger migraine for me, which can then trigger the other conditions. So basically I become a hot mess for a few days. So I have to be selective in how often I'll allow myself to read something really moving and like that. I'm like, I'm happy with escaping from the hard stuff because it helps my parasympathetic nervous system. Yeah, but if we add the creep factor into it or like anything, like I said, so if it's like horror or like scary paranormal, like we're talking like demons and like ghosts and they're making it like in a real world setting where, because I also have a very vivid imagination. So it's like, if they're in the real world setting with me, that's a little harder to talk myself out of than being like in a fantasy world.
Right. Because you're like, it could happen. It could happen to me right now. And then anxiety nerves.
And I'm like, I got to have the lights on. My husband, where are you at?
No reading at bedtime. Yeah. This series is so fun. I loved reading book one. I'm excited to get into book two. Like we already mentioned, book three is coming out in April. So do you have any other upcoming projects or things you're working on right now that you'd like to share? Okay,
yeah. So right now, again, as you said, I'm focusing on publishing the third book, and the trilogy will then be complete. And so I'm looking forward to kind of focusing on marketing with that. As I said, being a newer author, I'm learning so many things, and marketing is a whole nother beast and a whole nother world. And so fun fact, my editor, like I said, for book two and now three, she know I tried to work with and other creators who have situations like me who other people might not mm-hmm. want to work with them because their timelines take longer or whatnot. So my editor and I, we, like I said, she's part of the chronic illness community as well. So we just work really well together because we're very flexible and understanding. Mm-hmm. I'm also working to get books 2 and 3 on audio. Book 1 is on audio because audiobooks for me were kind of like a mental health saver. So when I was first, it took almost 3 years to get diagnosed and get help. And I had to see like 29 doctors. I was mainly bedridden during that time. And any sort of motion made me sick. So like I could no longer read because it was super painful. So when I said it took me 4 years to publish this, like when I say like the whole idea of blood, sweat, and tears, like I literally was in excruciating pain trying to get through this series of editing my first book and working through it. And I couldn't even really watch TV because there was too much action. So I felt, you know, I just would rewatch again series from the 90s where it was like Friends, you know, we're in their apartment. There's not a ton of action happening. I could watch things like that. And then like loud noises, loud sounds. I was just, yeah, I couldn't do a lot, but so in comes audiobooks. They took a little while for me to get used to, but they were a great benefit to my mental health. And like I said, allowing me to escape. So audiobooks is something I'm super passionate about. I know not everybody, some people just like them, just like or you know, you're busy mm-hmm. or you're doing chores. And so I just wanted to be able to offer my readers that, however, super expensive. So working on saving money for that and going to be doing a Kickstarter up here pretty quick. And my narrator from book 1, she's so awesome. She's a traumatic brain injury survivor. And so we connected because a lot of our symptoms are the same, even though the cause is different. So it's kind of fun to be able to connect with everybody within this writing community in some aspect. And, you know, everybody has their own journey and story. In terms of publishing, I have 3 book ideas that I am like desperate to get out. However, I've reached a point with like mental health capacity and like I homeschool my oldest right now. And then I have, you know, my youngest and I have health issues and my youngest is going through some stuff. And then again, writing, it's not the problem. It's like then it's the whole publishing and going through all the things. Mm-hmm. So I have decided for this year, I'm just focusing on marketing the trilogy. Next year, I won't be publishing, but I'll be writing the 3 books. So one is going to be a young adult, like rom-com. It's going to be like a very loose take on Beauty and the Beast retelling. And then another one is going to be like a Christmassy, I don't know if you want to think about like Hallmarky type vibe. It's going to be focused on 2 brothers. And then the 3rd one I want to write is actually nonfiction. I want to co-write it with my husband. And it's going to be on the notion of like chronic illness. And it's going to have 2 POVs, one from from my point of view as somebody who suffers from it. And then the other one will be from my husband's point of view, basically having to watch a loved one go through something like that. And it will hopefully encourage, you know, other people who are struggling or watching a loved one struggle. So I have lots of these things I want to do. So I'll probably just be spending maybe towards the end of this year and next year writing them and then hopefully publishing in 20. Oh my gosh, can we believe we're saying this 2025? I feel like that's forever away. Goodness. It's only a couple years. And then I have started a podcast with a friend of mine as well. It's super new, but that's what I also will be focusing on with her.
Well, we have talked so much longer than I anticipated, but I love everything that we talked about. But it's Read It With Whiskey, and we can't sign off until we talk a little bit about whiskey. However, you don't drink whiskey. So we're going to kind of pivot this last question a little bit. So at the end of the day, I drink some whiskey while I read a book. That's what I do to wind down at the end of the night. So what is it that you do to wind down and relax in the evening?
Right now, it's not really anything. I just work until I'm literally falling asleep at my desk.
And oh,
then
no.
I go to bed. But typically, I like to just kind of sit and watch somebody else's creative work. So like I'll like to watch like a TV show or something and chill once the kids are like in bed. And then I also like to fall asleep. I will listen for anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes to an audiobook in bed, eyes closed, and then I go to sleep. I mean, I could be cool and say I have tea. I don't even have tea. I just sit there. Occasionally I'll have strawberry ice cream or something.
There you go. Oh, that sounds so good right now. Some strawberry ice cream in an audiobook. Yes. Like, yes, please. I love it. All right, Laura. Well, where can people find you and your books and follow along with your author journey?
Okay, yeah. So I am on all the socials. My handle is the same on TikTok, Insta, and Facebook. It's at author Laura Dietering. You can find my website if you wanted to get signed copies or some signed book plates or whatnot, and lauradietering.com. And right now, my ebooks are exclusive to Amazon, so they're in KU. But you can get paperbacks on Amazon, but also anywhere paperbacks are sold. And then audiobook one, anywhere you listen, you can have access to it.
Awesome. Oh, it's been such a pleasure. I've had so much fun talking to you and diving into this world. So just thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was awesome.
You guys have no idea how much fun me and Laura had with this interview. I was forced to take a little bit of out from the audio recording because usually when I do interviews, it's like 20, 25 minutes. We talked for over 45 minutes, you guys. And obviously you can tell we had so much fun with the conversation. I loved being able to dive into these characters, the world, the magic, and everything in between. All of Laura's stories were so inspirational, and I'm excited to see where she's going next. So after we were done recording, me and Laura actually sat down and talked about her podcast that is now out. So you definitely want to go check this out because it is all about giving books ratings like they do for TV shows and movies, because there's not really a standard for how books should be perceived from the public. As readers, we should be able to go to these books and know exactly what to expect without there having to be trigger warnings and things like that. Obviously, Laura can do a lot more on the expansion of what the podcast is about, so I encourage you to go ahead and check out her social media and her podcast social media and the podcast itself. All of that is linked in the show notes. And of course, don't forget, book three in this trilogy is coming out this month in April. So if you're lucky, you might be able to go onto Amazon and see that it's available already, just depending on when you're listening in. So this whole trilogy is complete. You can read all of them back to back. Binge reading, again, I talk about this often. Binge reading a series is always so much fun. And now you can with this series. So go check it out. All the links are in the description. And next week on Read It With Whiskey, we have something very, very important. Next week, you will be getting an update on Read It With Whiskey and what's going to be happening in the coming months. And it's kind of a bittersweet episode for me, but I'm not going to say anything more here. You'll have to tune in next week to learn all about the nitty-gritty details. Until then. You've been listening to an episode of Read It With Whiskey. I'm your host, Laura Gentinen, and I want to personally say thank you so much for listening. Your support of the podcast means so much to me, and I would love to get to know you. Hop on over to Instagram and follow us at Read It With Whiskey. Please chime in on this episode's post, share it on your social media and with your friends, and come back next time to hear more from self-published authors. I'll talk to you soon.